Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and I got a question for you. Why would someone stuff the nose of a salmon? Why would they do that? We'll find out from our guest today. We're going to be talking about Professor Arthur Hassler, a pioneering research scientist who worked for many years at the UW-Madison. I interviewed him quite a few times way back when. He is his son, Arthur Frederick Hassler, or Fritz, as he's usually known, has just published a new book about his father. It's called The Way Home, a photobiography of Arthur Davis Hassler. Here to talk about the book and his father's life, and also along with him, John Magnuson, who's been a guest on this show a number of times over the years. John, a professor emeritus in the Department of Integrative Biology and director emeritus of the Center for Limnology, and he helped form the center in 1982 and was its first director. And he worked closely with Art Hassler over the years. So maybe you took a class from Art Hassler or worked with him, maybe a colleague's. What inspired you? Or maybe you just have questions about his work in limnology and his research. I hope you'll join in the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Fritz Hassler, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here. Longtime listener of Diane Rehm and Larry Mueller over the years.
Well, it's good to have you here. And also, John Magnuson, thank you for coming back again, being with us.
Thank you.
Really looking forward to this. Well, Fritz, you knew Art Hassler as your dad, of course. How did the rest of the world see him?
Well, I think in Madison, he worked very hard to help clean up the lakes here. So I think even though there's still some blue algae around, he was instrumental in helping to clean up the lakes here.
Yeah, I think you're certainly right about that. John, you worked with Art for many years. What do you remember most about him?
Well, I could talk about Art for a long time. And looking at Fritz's book and seeing all the photographs of Art through the years and his research and his students just inspired me to think more about it. But I remember a couple of things about Art, one of which was as he was retiring, mm-hmm. One of the things he was very good about was to prepare and plan for the next generations of limnology. He wasn't about to see limnology sink into the lake. The two buildings that he sponsored, the limnology lab on Mendota, the Trout Lake Station in Vilas County, provided bricks and mortar, but he also worked hard to provide new faculty, new funding, things of that before and as he was retiring.
Pretty dynamic guy.
Very dynamic and full of ideas and action-oriented.
Could I put a counterpoint to that? In spite of all that preparation for the future, he kind of forgot about leaving a legacy of his own life.
Yeah.
And it was only with the help of John here and my brother Galen out watching in the and my sister that we kind of had a detective story of finding many of the things, the photographs and that were lost and could have been lost to posterity, which I believe in the book tell the story of his life better than it's ever been told before.
Yeah, you had to go deep. I was reading in the book you describe that a lot of photos wound up in sort of almost like the dark web in a way, if you think about it in today's computer terms.
I think a file cabinet in a deep storage in Stoughton, and without John, we never would have found that.
Oh, man. Well, what were you most surprised to? Did you learn something that surprised you about your dad and all your work?
Oh, just reams and reams, because all the stories, the things that we remembered as children that were kind of faint memory, maybe a photo album that we saw as kids but don't have anymore. For example, he was... he arrived in London and Paris on VE days. People that don't remember that, that was the end of World War II. And for the next 3 months, he toured, devastated Austria, Germany, and He'd used the German knowledge that he had he'd gained as a Mormon missionary to talk to the Germans and ask them how the bombing had affected their lives.
So, one of the neat things about that is that he was particularly interested in visiting some of his scientific heroes, Conrad Lorenz, von Frisch, and he tells interesting stories of driving up an American military car in a uniform, and they soon discovered the man at their door was another scientist, and I think he really enjoyed and established lifelong contacts with some of those scientists at that time.
How did he get interested in conducting research? One of the things I admired, I guess, about him was he was a scientist and a researcher, but he was also a guy that would get out there and get his boots dirty and his feet wet, and really do the research out in the field.
Well, his dad out in Utah was a doctor, and his older brother was a doctor. But when it came time for him to go to school, it was the Depression, and there wasn't money to send him to med school. And he had been in his summer studies at BYU, had been up in the high mountains of the Uintas and the Tetons, and I think he fell in love with the outdoors and the fish at that time. And coming to Madison and studying with Burge and Drude was the best place in the United States. So off he went to Madison.
Interesting story. Talking today with Fritz Hassler and John Magnuson. Fritz has written a book about his dad, and the title of the book is The Way Home, a photobiography of Arthur Davis Hassler. And he's going to be speaking about the book on Friday, and we'll give you some information on that as we move along. But if you have a question, comment, or maybe an experience to share about Art, I hope you'll join in. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. And Tim and Shell Lake wondered if you're familiar with George Williams College Camp in Williams Bay. Are either of you familiar with that?
No, sorry.
Okay, so we don't have a connection there, but we do have a connection in northern Wisconsin that, John, I think you started talking about, and that's at Trout Lake.
Yeah, it's interesting. The limnology program here on the campus, we have one lake sitting in a very urban agricultural setting and lots of problems from that. And then we have another station essentially in the North Woods in Vilas County, almost a highly diverse set of lakes up there and almost a museum of lake types to study and much less human impact.
Yeah, and Trout Lake I like to fish muskie there. They're hard fish to catch, in a big one anyway, in those deep waters.
So Dad started going there in 1933 with Burge and Drude. We have pictures of them in the book. You'll see them. And we've been going ever since. I just took my brother there a couple of days ago, and everybody know in Madison and Chicago knows about up north, right? And he imparted that love of up north, northern Wisconsin, to us. And my wife Mary and I have a cabin in Three Lakes, and we spend 5 months of the year there and the winter in Utah.
Well, how did he, he studied here, he went to work here, worked with Burge, and I think Burge was kind of maybe a mentor in a way to him? No, not at all?
No, his mentors would have been Drude and other members. Interestingly, his PhD was on the physiology of a small water flea, digestive physiology. And so one of the really nice features of when he was a student here, one of his advisors on his degree was a physiologist from another department, as well as Drude was his major advisor.
Well, how did we arrive at a limnology department? I know Fritz, in your book, is kind of one of the cool things, was one of the original buildings looked like a house, which was the original limnology center, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that was his lab at the end of Park Street. All that's left of it is the basement, which is now Hoofer boat storage. And apparently he didn't get along that well with Burge and Jay, but the head of the department, Geyer at the time, gave him that little lab, and that's where he started his first experiments to figure out how well fish can smell, and that led to the experiments on the west. He went all the way out to Seattle area, to rivers there, and stuffing the noses of salmon, as you mentioned before, was the way his first step in proving that they used the sense of smell to find the exact place where they were born.
It was an interesting. And John, what's the benefit of that kind of research, of that particular research, for example? Why is it good to know that?
Well, there's a lot of reasons we could go into, but one of them was that the success of salmon in their future generations depends on them finding a suitable home stream in which to spawn, and thus the name, The Way Home. And he was the instrumental scientist that discovered that it was olfaction or smell that allowed them to come back to the same stream where they homed. And so, but nobody at that time even knew how they made their choices as they came to a branch in a river. And that was the nose-stuffing affair. Very simple technique. He had a forceps and a little wad of cotton. He jammed it in one nose. And when he jammed it in both noses, they just got lost. When they jammed it in one nose, they went the wrong way.
It was amazing, and he really did a lot of work in this whole area. And I remember reading in the book where he had even contacted scientists in Russia and China and Japan, I think, to offering to work with them in research.
Yeah, the Amur River is partly on the border between China and Russia. And like many of the rivers in other parts of the world, the salmon fishery had been destroyed. And it was his attempt to try to use what he knew about luring the salmon with chemicals to reestablish the salmon fishery in the Amur River.
And I think China or Japan and Russia didn't have much of a political problem, but China did work. He did work in China.
Yes, that's right.
As far as that last project that he had, he was retired at that point when he began to market and sell this to Russia and China, not sell it for dollars, but the idea. And so he was trying always to take his research and make it useful for the next generations of scientists. In many cases, he was successful. He never succeeded on the Amur River.
That's too bad. But he had a lot of other successes, and we're going to be talking about some of those with you, with our two guests, Fritz Hassler, who a graduate of the UW-Madison, PhD in meteorology. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about his career, too. And John Magnuson, who is the director emeritus of the Center for Limnology. He's helped form that center back in 1982 and was its first director. Questions, comments, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today. Larry Mueller here talking about Professor Arthur Hassler and his experiments in limnology. His son Fritz, or Arthur Frederick, I guess we could say, has written a book about him. It's titled The Way Home, a photobiography of Arthur Davis Hassler. And really fun to look through the book. As full of great photos of Professor Hassler in the field and with other students and working with a lot of people. And as a matter of fact, Fritz, as his son, young son, did a lot of work in that area too. Anyway, give us a call with your questions, comments. Maybe you worked with him at one point in your career or took a class from him. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, we talked a little bit about salmon with him. As I'm thinking back to my own interviewing, when I interviewed him, I'm pretty sure that we talked about his research in one lake, but turned into two lakes that they called Peter and Paul. Talk about that research, and maybe, John, start with you a little bit.
Well, Arthur is known for a number of major advances, and one thing he felt was that lakes were so complex that you couldn't put it in a test tube and just figure out what the lake was doing. So he had this idea. He wasn't unique globally, but in North America, he was pretty unique, of wanting to do a lake manipulation where you could look at the whole ecosystem's response to a manipulation.
And I think I helped with that one time up in Upper Michigan, Peter and Paul, where we put, I actually poured 100-pound sacks of lime into a bin, and we shot that into the water to increase decrease the alkalinity, I believe, if that's the correct term, and in Peter, while Paul remained as the control.
Yeah, and he actually, it was one lake that they actually bulldozed.
That's the one.
Bulldozed it in half, and I like the aerial view because it almost looks like a pair of glasses from a distance.
I think it's interesting that at that time, limnologists were thinking that most fresh waters did not have enough phosphorus for good fish production. And so the original motivation of that was to make the environment more suitable for fishes and make phosphorus more available to fishes, even though they use lime as their tool. Later in his career, and of course today, we now know that phosphorus and too much food in the lakes is a bigger problem than increasing the fish production.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he was interested, well, obviously interested in water the whole time. I remember one of your stories, Fritz. He did a lot of work at the Arboretum. And you tell a great story about a pond that he wanted to create.
Well, yeah. So, Dad, if you wanted to put a road across the Arboretum, Dad would fight that to his death. But he thought the Arboretum was his laboratory. And at one point, he decided that he would build some ponds, and it would be cheaper to do them with dynamite. And so he got somebody to show him how to use dynamite. They blew the set off the dynamite, but it just blew the peat and dirt into the air, and it came back down. It didn't work. He called it Hassler's Folly. If you want to hear the original recording of that, him speaking about that, come to my lecture on Friday night.
Oh, my goodness. Do you remember those that time, John?
That was before my time.
And maybe happily so. Oh, you mentioned yours, and we can mention this again, but you are speaking Friday evening.
Friday at 6 o'clock at the Memorial, Wisconsin Memorial Library. It's sponsored by the Matt Cady Institute. And you mentioned the photographs in the book. So none of this would have been possible if Dad hadn't been such a recording of everything that happened. Already as a 19-year-old Mormon missionary in Germany, Czechoslovakia, and Austria, he photographed everything that happened on that mission. And that continued, the bombing survey just after World War II. He was already taking color photographs of me when I was 1 year old in 1940 in beautiful Kodachrome with his Leica. And if you want to see those pictures, you buy the book or come to my lecture, and I'll show them to you on Friday night.
Oh, man. So you got a story or two, John, that you might want to tell about Art and experiences you had with him.
Oh, I'd be happy to talk for hours, but we're not going to do that, right? One of the stories that I enjoyed that he told was he was very much an internationalist. I mean, it wasn't just the scientists in Germany, but there were scientists in other countries and so forth. And I remember a trip that he made at the International Society of Limnology in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And two parts of that story he tells. When the American delegation was to leave and fly home, the guards at the gate did not allow the two of the members of that society that were Jewish to get on the plane. Mm-hmm. And what essentially the leadership on the plane did is they got off the plane. They wouldn't leave without them. But the story I wanted to tell was a biochemist and a microbiologist named Kuznetsov. And he had done this beautiful work on biogeochemicals of cycling in lakes. And he, at the meeting, asked Art if they could meet. And they had to meet secretly. So Art snuck out of the hotel, met him in a little coffee house or bar. And Kuznetsov had a manuscript. And he said, you know, I don't want to bury this in the Russian language or not get it published at all. And would you take it back to the United States and get it published in one of your major journals? Turns out that Art took it back, got it published in a journal called Limnology and Oceanography, one of the best journals in our field. And I still very much enjoy that article and seeing how Kuznetsov described biogeochemical cycling in lakes.
An amazing story and an amazing guy. Your research, obviously the work you did, Fritz, with your dad didn't turn into your own career.
Yeah, I never had a course in biology or zoology or anything, sorry to say. And without John, I wouldn't have had a very accurate book describing him. But he pointed me in the direction, and with the help of Professor Sumi in meteorology, opened the doors to a wonderful career, 30-year career as an atmospheric meteorologist at the Goddard Space Flight Center at NASA.
So you were there for your entire career.
Yes, essentially.
And if you were there today, you'd be probably looking at a hurricane.
Yes, Sumi invented the camera that if you're watching Florence spin, that's Sumi's camera, 1966. We just had the 50th anniversary, and I gave a number of talks about that just recently.
So I want to go back to his connection with the Arboretum. Why was that connection so important to him?
You know, I'm not actually quite sure. The first year he served on the Arboretum Committee was one of Leopold's last years, so maybe one importance was he got to meet Leopold and see how he thought. But Arthur was basically a very, very good naturalist who loved nature and loved lakes. And I think the Arboretum provided some of those goals in a protected area, and I think it was his environmentalism.
Did he study the lake there, or did he not?
Well, he did study the lake there, but this was close to the time that I arrived. Arthur had been very active in international science, as I mentioned, and helped develop a program to study lakes around the world. And Lake Winger was one of the lakes that was used in that study. The actual researchers were Jim Kitchell, who followed me and myself, but he stuck to it and got the funding to the United States for doing that. It was called the International Biological Program.
Interesting program for sure. While I'm talking with you, maybe you could talk a little more about the Laboratory of Limnology and what, you know, it started out, how it started and what, you know, with Art and how it's progressed or changed or whatever.
Before I start that, I might say we could have gone another 30, 40 years earlier and started with Burge and Jude and their influence on the campus. But let's not go there. Let's go to the Laboratory of Limnology. Arthur got the monies from the National Science Foundation and the university to build these two field stations, the Trout Lake one and the one on Mendota. And that was great. When Arthur retired, he left me with quite a legacy. Not only the legacy of the science, but the buildings and boats and all sorts of things. But I guess I was a little concerned that when this fellow retired, that the university would get tired of funding limnology and supporting it the way they had been. And so at that time, we were just two scientists in a department of, at that time was called zoology. And the zoology had many other needs that they needed to meet. The limnology program was serving the campus a whole and the state as a whole. And so it was important to me to give the institutional aspects of the limnology program a home. And so we, with the cooperation of the dean of the graduate school, the dean of the College of Letters and Science, with the support of the zoology department, made the center, and we created that, if you like, in 82. That gave us a lot more ability to reach out. Every time we needed to add, we didn't have to compete with our close colleagues in the zoology department. The dean could listen to us and our issues independently of other departmental needs. So that formed in 82, and it was partly out of I wouldn't call it paranoia, but certainly insecurity in seeing when such a great person retired, would the university continue the program?
And, of course, it has.
It has.
You know, just to go along with this, and I touched on it when you were talking about the limnology department. Rose emailed to ask why, well, she says, am I the only person who doesn't really understand what limnology is? Could you define it and talk about it in lay terms?
Well, limnology, the Greek root is wet. So that's the first clue. It's a wet science. The other one is that it's an interdisciplinary science, as it was established both in Europe and with Burge and Jaday, where you look at the lake as a system of interacting physics, chemistry, and biology. And you can't understand the complexities, for example, the recent blooms and problems we've had in the lake. You can't understand that by just looking at physics or chemistry or biology, and more recently, interdisciplinary science has to include the humans because we're very much a part of that story.
Fritz, you had something to add there.
Well, yeah, and the watershed, right? That's a huge part of it as well. Just wanted to mention, if you want to hear how he did finish the experiments on proving that salmon find their way with their nose, he did imprinted thousands of fingerlings and let them into Lake Michigan, and then drew them back into streams they had never gone to, just with the chemicals. And if you want to hear about that, come to my lecture on Friday. And the book is available on Create Space. If you can get a special price of $20 with a signed copy tonight, Friday night at my lecture.
Well, the whole history of this is so interesting to me. What are some of the other research projects that have taken place, or maybe that art formed to begin with, that still persists today there?
Do you want me to take a crack at
that? Yeah, take a crack at that, John.
Okay.
Go for it, John.
Well, first, let's go back to Burge and Jaday, the originators of limnology in North America. They did not do any what we would call applied science. They did not address environmental issues. The course that Jaday taught was called Limnology Zoology 124. When Art took over the teaching of the course, he changed its name. Limnology, the conservation of aquatic resources. And all of a sudden, you began to see a professor in the department that was interested in the problems that were occurring in Lake Mendota. The problems we've experienced the last few weeks, there were problems like it, when Art first started as a prof. And so the application of applied issues and how to understand and deal with applied issues initiated with Art and the over-nutrients coming into Mendota. What we've discovered in recent generations of professors, like Jake Van Der Zanden, who's the director of the center at the present time, is that that's not the only problem we have with lakes. We have a real serious problem with the invasion of exotic animals. And in the last 10 years, we've had an invasion of the spiny water flea and the zebra mussel, both of which are playing out in some of the things that are occurring in the lake right now, other than the rainfall and the runoff from the watershed.
Fritz, you were going to add to that.
I don't know if you got time for one more. One thing one of his characteristics was his love for the German language. And he used to always say, he had poems that he would recite when he was just on his deathbed almost. But he used to say, meine Beziehung zu die deutsche Sprache ist wie zu meiner Frau. Ich kenne sie, ich liebe sie, aber ich beherrsche sie nicht. And if for you German speakers out there, that means my relationship with the German language is like the one to my wife. I know her, I love her, but I can't control her. I don't command her.
But he commanded a lot of wonderful work in his time at the University of Wisconsin and elsewhere. He worked all over. He worked in many, many other states, Paul, Peter and Paul.
Well, he took us all to Germany for a year in 1955, and so now we all have to speak German. Every one of us is still fluent after all these years.
Yeah, and his work involved not only in Wisconsin, but in Michigan and out west as well, some of the far west states.
I mean, all that salmon stuffing was just near Seattle. 1,900 miles they had to travel to do that experiment out there.
What was his impact on Lake Michigan very great, do you think, his work? Did it have an application, John?
Well, he had hoped it would have more of an application than it did, but what it really was a very clever set of experiments where they imprinted small salmon, which we call smolts, to several odors, different odors. Yeah. And then later on, when those salmon matured and were going to come in home, he would attract them into one stream with one of the odors and the other with the other odor. And so in a field situation, not a laboratory setting, it was one of the places that he demonstrated that, in fact, salmons are very particular about where they go, and they learn that from imprinting, sort of like Conrad Lorenz's geese. You know,
yeah.
They get imprinted at a very early age.
And did it, if you think about his career, that certainly has to be a highlight of his career. What were the major contributions in your mind?
That was the bookend. So it's sort of at the other end of the bookend was that experiment with the nose stuffing. But it wasn't a perfect experiment, and I'll explain about that on Friday night. But he really nailed the coffin shut and proved without a doubt that it was— that the salmon, every time they face a choice between this stream and that stream, has to— they're actually triggered to go upstream by the smell. They won't even go upstream unless they smell their home stream. And then they have to choose between that tributary and that, and how many choices, 10, 20, 30 choices they have to make on their way back to their home stream.
Do we know why they have to go back to their home stream? Did we ever figure that out?
Well, I think you could argue from an evolutionary biology point of view that if they successfully came from that stream, that's a good place to deposit their eggs, and because it worked before, it should work again.
That makes a lot of sense.
Thanks, John. I appreciate that.
I often wondered what we were why they would want to go back there, but that now that you say it, that makes perfect sense.
There's a lot of streams that wouldn't have been suitable places to spawn.
Well, we'll take a call here. Carol Lynn in Milwaukee, we'll give you a chance to join in. Carol, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm in the car, but I parked momentarily to ask your guests if they're familiar with the name Clifford Mortimer, who was my neighbor for many, many years, started out in Madison, subsequently moved to Milwaukee UWM and started the Water Institute here. And in the last several years of his life, he lived in a nursing home and literally published a book. I think it's entitled Lake Michigan in Motion, while he was a resident in the nursing home. And I'd like to hear what your guests have to say, if they remember the name.
Yeah, well, not only do we remember it, we know him well. He's one of the heroes in the limnological area, and he was a physical limnologist. And a lot of the early work that he used in publishing that book on Lake Michigan in Motion was using the ferries that used to go across the lake and taking samples of the vertical distribution of water, and that was his sampling tool. Clifford came from England, and he came from a very famous laboratory in England, in the Lake District. He came to Wisconsin, and I think Arthur always had wished, and he came to Madison and worked in our lab with Art. And I think Art had always wished that he would have stayed. But in fact, it made some sense to have the Great Lakes program on the lakes, on the big lakes. And he was a very gracious man, a great leader, and I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
You'll see pictures of him in the book.
Yeah, there actually. Are. Yeah. I remembered that. There, you've got some photos of Clifford Mortimer in the book. Carol, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Page 107 in the book, pictures of Clifford Mortimer.
Let's go to Mary in Door County. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I just have to tell you, I have
wonderful memories of Arthur swimming at Sherwood Pool. I was the manager there, and he would walk the lakeshore path. He didn't have the greatest eyesight at the time, and he would come to the pool every day and swim a lap, get out, get a lemonade, swim another lap, and always thank me for watching over his life.
That's wonderful. His widow, Hathaway, who he was married to at that time, will be here, and all six of his children at the lecture on Friday. If you want to meet them, please come.
Oh, that's great. Carol, or Mary, I'm sorry, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And just to review your lecture, The Way Home, it's Friday, this Friday, right. 6 p.m. at the UW-Madison Memorial Library,
yes.
If I'm not mistaken. So you're going to be talking about the book and his life story.
A lot of the things you heard about today will be in detail, in color, photographs, many of them. That's a big part of it is the photography.
Well, I tell you what, Fritz and John, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I appreciate it very much. The Way Home, a photobiography of Arthur Davis Hassler and written by his son, Arthur Frederick Hassler. And John Magnuson, our guest as well. John, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Integrative Biology and Director Emeritus of the Center for Limnology. He helped form the center back in 1982 and was its first director. You know, one of the names that came up during our conversation was Aldo Leopold. And coming up next, we're going to be talking about the Aldo Leopold Foundation with its current board president and executive director, Buddy Halfacker, next here on the Ideas Network.